Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Why Would You Tell Me That? A podcast with me, Dave Moore, and him, Neil Delamere. And each week, we try and, I don't know, we outfox each other, but we try and wow each other with some incredible story that we should know, but we don't. So Neil Delamere, how are you?
I'm very good. I view it like a marriage of trivia that we have to keep the interest and the knowledge and the spark alive. And that's what we do. We go away and do our research each week and then come back and present ourselves anew. Washed on our wedding night.
Yeah, I was just about to say, so this is you now in the fancy dress and you've sprayed the perfume on your neck and you're ready to wow me. So
there's rose petals on the bed. Dave, I'm done pussyfooting around in this podcast with some interesting, very fascinating facts, but I want to up the level.
Nice.
I'm bringing A game this week. I'm going to give you the secret to eternal youth. That's all.
What?
Yes.
This is a bold claim, and there are cosmetics companies all around the globe whose ears have pricked up and said, what?
Yes. It also means you can stay on commercial radio forever and ever and ever.
Now so, you're talking my language.
I thought that would get you, all right? Today in part two, we're going to talk to Professor Emma Teeling. All right? She is a zoologist and a geneticist from University College here in Dublin. And we're going to talk to her about the genetics of bats, because some bats, Dave, don't age.
You see,
they don't age.
I think you're confusing bats with the mythical vampires who are dead. They are the undead, hence they don't age. That's why let's face it, they're all Eastern European men in their 50s.
Now, who's confusing people now? You're confusing vampires with Paul Rudd, who doesn't age. I was going to say that bats are the mammalian Paul Rudd, but I think Paul Rudd is the mammalian Paul Rudd, isn't he? I'm pretty sure that Paul Rudd is a proven mammal. They are the flying Paul Rudd, shall we say. They don't age, right? So you meet a bat when he's 6. You meet him again when he's 14. Looks the same. No difference. In fact, he probably looks happier because he's made his confirmation and his communion and he's had a few quid put aside.
He's got himself a PS5. He's delighted with life.
Happy days. But Professor Emma Teeling has said, and I quote, "I fully believe the secret of everlasting youth lies deep within bat's DNA." I fully expect her to be assassinated by Oil of Ole before she can spill the beans and everything. From Creme de la Mer in a hedge outside her house.
What are you worth again? Is it 7 or 8 billion from the Creme de la Mer family?
Yeah. And I'm doing this podcast for love. I don't need payment.
Not at all.
Don't tell our sponsors and all the ads about that. Bats are amazing, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to concentrate on aging with Emma in the second half. But I didn't think that much about bats until this episode. And then I started to research them, Dave. And oh my good Lord, they are absolutely amazing. It's estimated in the US, if bats went by the wayside, they would have to spend $3 billion on insecticide and pesticides.
Jeez.
That's how many insects they eat. This is where there should never be a DC Marvel crossover, because Batman would eat Spider-Man. That'd be it.
And Ant-Man.
So we know that they eat loads of insects. We know that most of them use echolocation.
Actually, I've seen a video on the way they use echolocation. So they, from what I understand, is they kind of like, they go bing, bing, bing when they're flying, and then when it bounces back, then they go much faster and they're kind of go bing 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 bing, and that's like they increase the speed of their audio that they're sending out in order to completely perfectly triangulate where the insect is.
It's just phenomenal. But of course, you see, not all of them do it. This is what I did not know. So certain fruit bats, like flying foxes, you know, flying foxes, they're the ones that look like a corgi fucked an accordion. And I actually already have a favorite bat.
That's amazing.
A bat is the smallest mammal in the world.
Okay, how small are we talking?
We are talking 2 grams, under 2 grams.
Ah, stop.
It's called the bumblebee bat.
Right.
And it is the smallest mammal in the world by body size, 29 to 33 millimeters long. The smallest skull of any mammal. So when all, like, when all the other tiny mammals, like the shrews, are looking to put on Hamlet and they're looking to do Yorick, they will get the skull
of a
bumblebee,
a bumblebee bat.
A bumblebee bat is so small, it's smaller than a bumblebee.
No.
It's smaller than the largest bumblebee, yeah.
Oh, come on. That is ridiculously cute.
Like, if you think 4, 5 grams of sugar in a teaspoon of sugar,
yeah,
it's half that size.
2 grams.
Yeah. There's people listening to this and they're using the sugar analogy. And then there's other people using cocaine. And they're a different sort of person.
Nobody who is into those kinds of things listens to this podcast. Sugar, I mean.
Yeah.
They don't listen to this podcast.
The cocaine people, we like to appeal to them because they make rash decisions with advertising budgets.
Absolutely. So, and they listen to this podcast on 2 speed. So now everything sounds like this. And they're really happy with the way the podcast is going so fast. It's amazing. I love those guys. They're so talkative.
Let's do a bat special. This one was amazing. Let's do a whole thing about bats. Let's put it out in the frequency only bats can hear. I love this.
If you played this podcast at 2 speed, I do think you would enjoy it more. You may understand less, but like you'd be just buzzing getting out of the car.
Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you, what goes well with cocaine? What a segue that is. Tequila. Without bats, we don't have tequila.
How come?
Because they pollinate the agave plant, which gives us tequila.
Okay. God, they're doing a huge service to the world, eating insects and giving us tequila.
And you're going to love this one. While we're on the whole pollination business, right, there's a little bat, and he's amazing, called the tube-lipped nectar bat. This lad is the only creature that pollinates a particular plant. It's in the Ecuadorian cloud forest. And he's the only one who does it because he's the longest tongue, in relative terms, of any mammal. So it's 1.5 times its length. So in human terms, Dave, you would have a 9-foot-long tongue.
Well, Neil, you have unlocked a scenario you were not expecting.
Oh, okay.
Because although this is a podcast for our listeners, and obviously, thankfully, at this point, they cannot see us. You and I have video for our conversations. And I'm going to reveal to you now that this... What did you call him? Tube-lipped, long-nosed...
Tube-lipped nectar bat.
Nectar bat. Hmm. He has got nothing on this. Now, listeners, bear with me.
Oh, dear Lord, what?
I was waiting. Was there going to be any reaction?
It just kept coming out. What the hell?
I have an exceptionally large tongue, right? Now, so much so... That at one point,
this explains so much about how you're punching above your weight, marriage wise.
At some point, I was having respiratory issues, and I went to a doctor, a consultant, and he said, "You need to go to another consultant. He deals in airways and tongues and all." And I was like, "Tongues, whatever." So anyway, I went to this guy in one of the private hospitals here in Dublin, and one of those things where I could only see him at 7:15 in the morning, and it was like £400 or whatever.
Yeah.
So I went into him. He totally examined me, did all these respiratory tests. I was in a machine. I was breathing between whatever. And then at the end, he just went like, "And just open your mouth there." And he got a soft tweezers, and he pulled my tongue out further than I've ever stuck it out before. And he put it back in, and he went, "Do you snore?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do sometimes." Yeah. And he goes, "Yeah. I've got a diagnosis for you." And I was like, "All right." He goes, "Your tongue is too big for your head."
You and the fella from Kiss.
Yeah. And I said to him, I said, "Look, I'm one of those guys. I love the medical terminology. So can you tell me, like, is it called, like, you know, vladiotitis? Like, what?" And he goes, "No, it's actually called tongue too big for head. Like, that's literally the name of the diagnosis." Right. And I was like, "No, I really don't want this to be the diagnosis." He's like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Literally what happens is your tongue is so big that in resting, it lolls back into like and covers your airway and makes vibrates. And that's why you snore. You don't snore because you've got, you know, blocked sinuses or you're overweight or any other contributing factors to snoring. You snore because tongue too big for head. That is what I suffer from.
So I'm trying to describe how big your tongue is for the people at home. He could lick stamps in another room. While his head was in one room, he could lick all the stamps in another room. You should get that pierced. The amount of studs you could fit in that bad boy. People would be like, oh my God, your tongue studs are amazing. You'd be like, yeah, it says I'm a legend in Braille. It is gigantic. Oh, no, I figured a new job for you. Oh, do you know American football? They bring on a specialist kicker and that's all he does.
Yeah.
Right. You, the hacker. Now, do you know the end of the hacker?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the tongue goes
the Kiwis, they're against France in the world final, right? They're looking for every edge. They're getting to the end bit of it and the Kiwis just go, bring on Dave.
Bring on
tongue boy.
Bring on the tongue boy.
And that thing comes out.
Yeah. It would. God. I think it would strike fear. It would definitely enhance a hacker. There's no question.
Do you know where that starts in your body? Because like the bat, it starts in their heart around their sternum. I'm going navel with what.
Yeah,
you're
I think from what that specialist said, I think I'm possibly down around the knee area. I think.
What's a tongue specialist called? Because I've an issue. I like an individual name specialty with a doctor. What are
right.
you? I'm a cardiologist. I don't like ear, nose, and throat.
Right,
because
too,
ear,
too
nose,
broad.
And throat, there's too many. It sounds like it just sounds like it's made up. It sounds like they've gotten the leftover bits. Like, oh no, we're all doctors. I'm a doctor of ear, nose, and throat. Dr. Dave there is legs, bums, and tums, and Dr. Mary, she is back, sack, and crack. So all covered. Who's tongue man?
I don't know. I can't. I mean, I could go with tongologist, but I'm reaching there. No,
while
know.
We mentioned the Batman thing, by the way,
yeah.
Obviously Batman is related to bats. Did you see that story about the guy? You know this the thread on Reddit where it's "Am I the asshole?"
And oh yeah.
The people just ask, "Am I the asshole in this scenario?" And then they describe a scenario.
Yeah.
And there's a woman, and she said, "My husband is skipping the due date of the birth of our child because he wants to see Batman on the day it is released because it's very important to avoid spoilers."
This is the new The Batman with Robert Batman Pattinson. Well, obviously new for us now and recording this. If you listen to this in 5 years' time, you're like, what? The Batman is Paul Rudd. What are you talking about? Because I can understand that. Like, The Batman has been built up so much and obviously there are a lot of spoilery things in The Batman that I can understand why he may need to prioritize things here.
Yeah, but he's going to miss the birth of his child to see The Batman. That surely shows a profound lack of understanding of the character. Because if there's one superhero that will be appalled by substandard parenting, it's renowned orphan and parent longer Bruce Wayne, isn't it?
It's
his whole origin story.
Yeah. I mean, if he knew his dad had chosen, you know, to go and say, I mean, I don't remember what era Bruce Wayne was due to be born in. I presume it must have been the 70s. But if he was gone to see, you know, Rosemary's Baby or, you know, The Shining in the cinema when he could have been at the birth of Bruce Wayne, I'm sure Bruce would have been appalled.
He was absolutely appalled. Like, this poor woman you're not the asshole in this. He is the asshole. There's, you couldn't be more right. If you listen to this, it's unlikely, but if you listen to this lady who's had the baby, you could not be more in the right. No one has ever been more in the right than this. Unless somebody years ago asked Reddit, "I've just been kissed by one of the lads in the garden, then the Romans took me away, and it's not looking good. Am I the asshole?"
That's the only person who was less wrong.
Yeah.
I think I was more wrong. I was more wrong than the Batman guy.
What did you do?
So my second son, Sam, was due on the 15th of June, 2012.
Okay.
And to those of you who remember, particularly
I'm guessing
you,
Ireland were playing Croatia or Italy or somebody.
You're spot on. Ireland qualified for the Euros and it was in Poland.
Yeah.
And in my job on radio, sometimes things work out, and it worked out that we were going to be able to go to Poland to do the radio show from Poland in our giant broadcast bus that would be driven across the continent from Ireland, across the continent to Poland, and that we could go there on airplanes, catch up with it and do the show and be with the boys in green and bring the atmosphere, the color of a football tournament to our listeners back home who couldn't make it. And then I said to the lads in work, I was like, well, yeah, but my son is, or my baby, I don't know what it was, a boy or a girl, my baby is due like 2 days before the first match. And they were like, yeah, I suppose you can't really go. Then I was like, well, yeah, well, let me just run that up the flagpole at home. So I went home to my wife and I said, hey, I could go to the Euros. And she was like, oh my God, the Euros. Massive football fan. I was like, yeah. But obviously, like, our baby is due before the Euro starts. And she went, I'll hang on, you go. And I went to the Euros 2 days after my child was due.
Yeah.
And stayed for the first match.
Yeah.
And stayed for the second match. And then there was a week-long gap for the third match in the group.
Yeah.
And I stayed for that too. And then I flew home.
Yeah.
And then he was born on the 4th of July. He waited for me. I was in Poland at the Euros going, shoes off for the boys in green. I hope my missus isn't texting me because I've got no signal in the stadium and I don't know if she's in the hospital. But yeah, he waited.
Do you know something? Your wife is an absolute saint. For two reasons. One, she allowed you to do that. And two, when it transpired that we played the worst football that an Irish team has ever played at a major tournament, and I include probably us against Egypt in 1990 for our non-Irish listeners, and she allowed you to watch that travesty.
Spain, where Spain were passing the ball around in pity at us for the final 10 minutes as we all sang the Fields of Athenry, and Roy Keane famously called out the boys and greens as supporting the travelling support for just cheering nothing. Like, we were cheering the worst performance, and we were like, yeah, don't care. That's what I was in Poland for while she was due to be in the hospital giving birth. So, yes, I am a very lucky man.
Yeah. No, you're an asshole. That's what you are. I was just typing out to Reddit. Just onto the message board.
There's another thread there. It's just, this guy is the asshole. Don't need the question. Just want to let you know. Yeah.
I think if I was the woman who had the baby, I would spoil everything that fella had ever looked forward to. Do you know that? I would give him spoilers for the rest of his life.
Get a job on The Batman 2 and then in order to just know things and then just drop it over breakfast one day.
Sneaking into the Winnebago, just random script, pictures of the script. He dies. I'd be ruining everything. Walks by the Bible, dies in the end. You know, he's reading the Bible. Right? He just pick up his phone. Kaiser Sose is ringing him. Hold on. And picture Kevin Spacey comes up. I'd ruin everything in that guy.
Bruce Willis was dead all the time.
And yeah, they were in the village and it looked like it was in the 1700s, but outside, modern life. We have so much more to talk about on bats, but I think we might throw in some of it into an expert because, I mean, I don't know why we're talking about bats.
Always a good idea to bring an expert in. Yeah.
Who will actually tell us about stuff in great detail and bring the gravitas that we lack. So in part two, we'll talk to Professor Emma Teeling, why she's on the hit list from Isle of Ole and big, I was going to say big pharma, big smooth, big face.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to part two. We are joined now, I'm delighted to say, by Professor Emma Teeling, who's a zoologist, a geneticist, and organizer of the BAT1K project that aims to map the genome of all of the 1,400 or so species of bat in the world so we can find out their genetic secrets. Emma, very excited to talk to us today. Very excited to talk to you today. I talk to us all the time. thanks a million for coming on the show.
Oh, no, it's great that you have me here talking to you about these amazing animals.
And mapping the genome that Neil mentioned just very quickly, like, that's a big project. Like, is it something you'll achieve in your lifetime?
Yes, I hope so. Well, I'm also studying bats because of all the cool adaptations they have to slow down aging. So I hope that's going to help me live long enough to actually achieve the project.
There you go.
This is, Emma's actually 400 years of age. That's you didn't know this, but she precedes UCD. She was standing in the field in Trinity, and they built the college around her.
In UCD, not Trinity. UCD.
No, yes, but I had to pick Trinity because Trinity's actually 400 years old. The jokes have to be accurate and work, Emma.
sorry, focus.
I'm glad you mentioned aging because this is the bit I want to focus on. They're very special animals, but they do tend to buck the mammalian trend in terms of their aging, both size and age-wise.
Yeah, they're very extraordinary. So if you think about in nature, there are these certain rules, as you would have it. So small things, they live fast and they die young. So think of a mouse, think of a shrew, think of your pet hamsters. And big things live slow and live long. Think of a bowhead whale living over 200 years. And what this means is that little small things should have very short lifespans. Big things that live slowly should have very long lifespans. And you can look at body size and predict how long something's going to live for. Now, bats are some of the smallest mammals in the entire world. And they've bucked this trend because bats can live up to 10 times longer than expected, given their body size. Indeed, they're some of the longest lived of all mammals, given their body size. And so the question is, how do they do it?
I don't know if Neil watches enough football or if you do, Emma, to understand this. But in every football game nowadays, they put up something called XG. And XG is the expected goals for the team during the game. And the X, you know, you want to see a two would be incredible. But so what you're saying is, to draw the same analogy, that if you put a bat into this football software, its XG, its expected, you know, age limit, it would far exceed that in a game. And it would win 6-0 instead of 1-0.
Yeah. If you were to correct for body size, so you know you say one human year is the equivalent of 7 dog years.
Yeah.
So if you were to do this with a bat, what you would say that bats can live to about the equivalent of 258 human years.
Oh my God.
Without showing signs of aging. And this is the bat that holds a longevity record. It's Myotis brantii, was caught as an adult, was released and caught again 42 years later with little to no signs of aging. But it weighed 1/3 that of a mouse. So this shouldn't be possible. So bats have evolved cool and unique mechanisms to allow them really do well in the soccer pitch, as you'd say.
You'd love this stat, Dave. I know you love a stat.
Yeah.
19 mammals outlive humans, you know, proportionally. And bats are 18 of the 19 species.
You're joking.
No, I'm not. I don't know what the 19th is, actually.
Okay, now think of the ugliest mammal that you can think of.
That's not fair. Neil's right in front of us. Come on.
At least I know I live longer than you.
They are, and I don't think they're ugly. I think they're very beautiful.
Can I have a guess?
Yeah. Oh, blobfish.
No, mammal, Neil.
Oh, did I say mammal? I read out the stat and I still didn't realize.
naked mole rat.
And Neil, what's your guess?
well, they don't get cancer. So I'm going to guess the same thing as he said.
Yeah, you're both right.
Okay. So the naked mole rat.
Yeah, they can live up to 30 years, but they're rodents. They shouldn't be able to do that. But there's really kind of only a handful of these rodents that can do that. But bats, when we've looked at it and said, how do you study bats in an aging context? So what you have to do is you got to catch them as a baby when their finger bones are not yet fused. And so you shine a torch under, you open up their wing, shine a torch underneath it, and you see a little gap in between their bones. And that means that they're under one. You put a little microchip in them like you would a dog or a cat, and you release them. Because you can't age bats any other way in the wild, because the minute they're adult size, they don't change. And they can get to adult size pretty quickly. Within 3 months to a year, they're fully grown. So what we have to do then is we have to re-catch them, scan them like you would something in a supermarket, and the microchip comes up and goes, it's 49253. And you know, this is this bat we caught in 2010 as a baby. We caught it now again in 2022. So that bat's 12 years of age. And that's how we age them.
I mean, bats, they don't age, and that's amazing, but they're stupid. Every time I saw you, I'd be like, she's going to go and catch me. Like, you catch the same bats every year, do you?
Well, you have really touched upon a bit of a sore point for us field biologists, because they can do things like become, we could use the word trap shy. Maybe a better word is trap aware. Mm. And so what will happen is that, so when we catch them, they use echolocation to orient. And so what we have to do is we'll put up our traps up in these churches in Brittany in France, and we develop traps. We try to cloak them acoustically so the bats can't hear them. I'm married to a physicist, and we spend a lot of time trying to work out how can we put an acoustic cloaking device on these traps. But what will happen is, so we're able to catch the same individuals every year because they're hungry. And so motivation to feed sometimes overrides this potential fear they have. But we've never lost one. We catch them, we measured them, we weighed them, we're very gentle with them. It's a longevity study, so they have to live. And we take a little tiny bit of blood, maybe a couple of drops from the veins near their ankles. And we take a little tiny piece of their wing, we flash feed in the lab, we feed them, we give them water, and we release them. And, you know, they eat, they're happy as Larry, you know, chewing down on these little, what are they called again? Mealworms. Chew, 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 and we feed them and we let them go, and they come back every year. They do learn.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, like, they absolutely learn. Then they know that either A, I want to be afraid of the trap, or as you said, trap aware. They go, if I go in there, I'm going to get a lot of mealworms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the question that strikes me is, how do the bats not, as I suppose, obviously they must age, but they don't age in the way we understand aging.
Yeah.
And how do they do this?
Well, that's what I've been studying for now the past 10 years. And so we're trying to work out, what do they do to slow down aging? So this aging study we have in France, we go catch these long-lived bats from the year they're born, and we sample them every year. And in the lab, I have a bunch of brilliant PhD students and postdocs. And we start to look at what are the biological markers and think, what changes in bats as they age, to try and understand what's different from bats and us. So what you find in particular that's really different. So we've been taking blood, and we sequence all of the genes that are expressed in the blood in bats, in young, middle-aged and older bats, to see if the same level of dysregulation in our genes as we age, does it happen in bats or not? Or how do they stop the age-driven deterioration that they should be experiencing as a mammal? But what we found is, as they age, they increase their ability to repair and regulate their DNA.
Okay.
So the DNA doesn't get damaged. They also are able to maintain these protective caps on the ends of their chromosomes. These are things called telomeres. And as your cell replicates over and over and over, they get shorter and shorter and shorter. Eventually, they get so short that that cell is now considered to be old. It should be removed. That's a good thing that happens. Mm. So it's removed to make room for healthy new cells. Or sometimes it sits there with these really short telomeres and becomes essentially a zombie cell. It doesn't remove itself. It emits the SASP, as they say. It turns into essentially a zombie cell, makes all your other healthy cells like zombie cells, and it can drive aging. But in bats, their telomeres don't shorten. And we don't know what they're doing because they're not using the standard way of maintaining telomeres, which is an enzyme called telomerase, which is very regulated in where it's expressed. It's in your pre-egg or pre-sperm cells because you want to make sure you can maintain your telomeres, an enzyme used to maintain telomeres. But it gets switched on sometimes in cancer cells, many, many times in cancer cells, which means the cell essentially becomes immortal. And so bats are able to maintain telomeres without using this particular enzyme. We're looking at how. They also have this really cool and unique immune response. So they're able to dampen this certain type of inflammation that we experience. So as we age, we become more and more inflamed. So aging really is living. And your cells are replicating, they're functioning, they are making energy, and making energy comes with these byproducts. And the byproducts break up your cells and make you all immune inflamed, as I would say. And if you think about it, arthritis, that's an inflammatory disease. Disease of the old age are typically inflammation. But bats have evolved really unique mechanisms to somehow dampen that inflammation. And we're looking into what do they do to be able to dampen their inflammation, because not only does this mean that this allows these bats not suffer the same level of age-driven inflammation that a lot of age diseases have, it also means they have a unique way of dealing with pathogens, such as lots of different viruses. And so these are some of the kind of hints that we're looking into at the moment in terms of what have bats evolved to slow down aging.
I have so many questions.
Isn't it even more remarkable than we think, because of the, like, they are the only mammals who can achieve true flight. This creates or uses a huge amount of energy. Their mitochondria are going mad with all the oxygen. Normally that produces free radicals, which causes all sorts of havoc in your system. But their anti-inflammatory response can mitigate against that.
That's one of the theories, and it's, sometimes people question it. Could really a new form of locomotion really drive this adaptation of innate immune response? I think it can. But this is something that we're actually looking into. And Neil, you've hit it straight in the head. That's exactly what we hypothesize is going on.
Right. So allow me a couple of things here. So number one, are they immortal?
No. No mammal is immortal.
So what will eventually...
Stop asking all the questions I want to ask, Dave.
Sorry. What eventually happens to expire? Are they killed by environmental factors? Like, does something hunt them, or like, how long would they live were they left alone?
So it's a very, very good question. Lots of people always ask me that. So they are resistant to aging. They have slowed it down from what should be expected, but everything ages, you know, life eventually catches up with you. The things that do kill bats are predators such as owls and really cold springs. Oh. So the thing is, there is an environmental effect. Now, the longer you live, the chances are you're going to catch a disease, you're going to get eaten, you're going to get hit by a car, or you're going to starve. And so bats don't experience any age-driven. So there's no age-driven mortality in bats. But at the same time, their chances of having accidents are the same the whole time. So what we found is that owls will feed on them. They really hate it. If there's an owl screeching outside the roost, they're not coming out, no matter how hungry they are. So owls also cause us field biologist problems. But what they've shown in these long-lived bats in the UK, these are these greater horseshoe bats that Roger Ransom and Garrett Jones, they've been studying them now for 60 years. And what they'll find is that you got to think about the life cycle of a bat in this part of the world. So what'll happen is they have their babies in late June, July. Babies grow by August. They have to start, everything has to start feeding because they go into hibernation. And they have to be really, really fat before they go into hibernation because they use their fat reserves. Now, what'll happen is in these bats in the UK, when they come out of their hibernation, that's when the females start the gestation. So they're already pregnant and they've slowed this down. And if there's a cold spring, what happens is the females can go more into torpor and take an awful lot longer to produce the baby. So the baby then gets born later in the summer. And then what will happen is they're much skinnier going into hibernation. and then they come out in the spring. If it's a bad spring again, so environment, and what we've shown with their telomeres, again looking at what can cause changes in these end of these chromosomes that drive aging, is that actually the bad environmental effects, you can see it. They shorten faster or they change faster if there's bad spring. So environment is bad. But the other thing that was wiping out bats in their millions in North America was this fungal disease, white nose syndrome. So they would go, I mean, this is like something out of the worst nightmare.
Right.
So they go into the cave, they go to hibernate, and then this cold-loving fungus that could come in 4 degrees starts to grow and replicate on the bats while they're sleeping. And it causes their immune system to respond. They get very, very skinny. And when they wake up, they get all these necrotic, their wings basically all kind of nearly melt and they die.
Wow.
So this is proper alien stuff. When you go to sleep, this thing comes and grows on you. So the thing is, so they respond different to different types of pathogens.
How far are we along the road of 1,400 species of bat in terms of the genome mapping?
So we published the first pilot paper. So Bat1K was this big consortium of scientists that myself and Sonia Verney, she's one of the other co-founding directors, decided it would be a great idea to sequence every single bat species because we can look in their genome to answer some of these questions like what do they do to slow down aging and what's going on with their viruses and their viral pathogens and how they respond to that. So where we're at, we have published the first, so 6 of our genomes are published, got published in Nature. We developed new ways of making genomes, new ways of putting them together, new ways of analyzing them, and found really cool stuff. It's pretty important for the fight against COVID-19. We have now got the genome sequence for phase 1, which is 27 different bats representing each different family level that we've sequenced the genome and we're analyzing them as we speak. We've also been able to find funding to be able to sequence bats of relevance to COVID-19 or coronaviruses. So again, potentially natural reservoirs of the ancestors of SARS-CoV-2 that don't get sick from it. We can now go and we've sequenced their genome. So we're getting there, but we need lots more money. anybody listening, we need 20 million. Mayday, mayday.
Oh, we have lots of listeners with that kind of money. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I refer you to our cocaine addicts in the first part of the show.
So another question then is, in nature, there tends to be not really obvious, but reasons why things happen. Because evolution has decided this is the strongest and therefore that will happen. So what is it about bats? What competitive advantage do they get from their slowed aging, other than the fact that they just propagate and live longer? I mean, that can't be the only benefit.
But then people always assume that evolution has direction. It doesn't necessarily, but as you say, what was the competitive advantage of being able to live longer in terms of it being selected for that particular species? It's a very good question. And the one thing that bats do dash mice do not do, things of similar size, is flying. They only have flying. This is again, but think of bumblebee bats, smallest mammal in the world. The baby weighs 2/3 that of a female when she's flying around. So bats only have one baby a year. So they have to live for a long time.
Right.
Because if you think about it, they have to be able to replace mummy and daddy or the population numbers are going to decline. So they have to have at least 2 babies that are going to survive. So rather than having 14 babies all at once and then living a very fast, crazy life like a mouse, they actually are able to, and they've argued against because of flight. So what flight does is it allows bats avoid daytime predators, for example, birds. And that with flight and being nocturnal allows them to do this. And what this means is that rather than having to go and expend lots and lots of energy into making lots of babies very fast because you're going to get eaten really quickly, they're able to maintain the integrity of self. And so they live life at a more slower pace. And again, potentially by being able to avoid predators, evolution has now selected for the ability to only need to have one baby at a time. It's all driven by flight.
See that, Dave? They have one baby that they'll turn up to the birth of, that they really love, that they're not going to go to the Euros instead of missing the birth of their child.
I saw the first one. The second one was irrelevant at this point. Come on.
No comment.
And Emma, how close are we? So you talked about they're a reservoir for certain pathogens, but they don't seem to get sick from them. So rabies, SARS, MERS, COVID. How close are we to figuring out why that may be the case, if it is the case?
The idea of that there's still it's very questionable if bats really, really, truly are the source population for lots of these zoonotic diseases, because they've never actually found SARS-CoV-2, for example, in bats. They've found ancestors in the bats. We found that when you look within the genome, you see this expansion of all of these genes. They're these antiviral, very aggressive inflammation genes. You see this expansion of this thing called an apobec locus, for example, that all bats have, that we looked at. But then what you also see when you look within the genome is that certain genes are missing that make these inflammatory responses, such as these things called these Fein genes, for example. All bats that we've looked at are missing this.
Wow. And
what this means is that they have this, looks like they have a very aggressive, very different antiviral response, but then they are able to go and dampen this with an equally aggressive anti-inflammatory response. So I liken this once to, it's like the Hulk. And so their immune cells, so they're able to switch on the Hulk mode to very quickly go and get rid of the pathogens. And then they're very quickly able to whisper sweet nothings to the Hulk. So what is it? Black Widow used to be able to do that.
Yeah.
To turn the immune system back down into calming down. So they have both. And you can see it in the genomes. Some of the other stuff that we were doing, and we did with Luke O'Neill's lab, actually. I'm spending time with Luke trying to understand a bit more about immunity, is we were able to take stem cells, so bone marrow from a bat that unfortunately she had to put down. She was a baby that was caught in France. She had been attacked by a bat, by an owl, had lost a wing, was still being fed by her mother. She was adult size, was never going to be able to fly. So she was humanely euthanized by our vets. And we were able to take long bones, wash out the bone marrow, which had stem cells in it, turn it into immune cells in the lab, and challenge that to see what happens. And when you do this, it's extraordinary. Because what you find is when you're able to mimic an infection in a bat immune cell in a lab, what you see is that when you look at the ratio of their anti-inflammatory or their inflammatory, their anti-inflammatory cytokines, what you'll find is that the bats are much, they're able to mount this really aggressive antiviral response and then dampen it by this anti-inflammatory response. And you can see it by looking at the immune cells. It's matched by the virus. But what was quite interesting was that in Beaumont, this ratio that we looked at, inflammatory to anti-inflammatory, if a patient turned up and had this immune gene profile similar to a bat, they weren't going to need to go on a ventilator. More like a mouse, much, much higher level of unresolved inflammation they were. And so this shows us that by studying bats and they're working out, right, when do we have to switch on this antiviral response? And when do we have to then switch it off?
Yeah.
By studying how this progresses, this will give us much better insight in how we deal with all types of diseases.
That was that cytokine storm that they talked about at the start of,
yes,
of the pandemic. And so yes, the bat can attack the virus internally and then calm itself down. So the immune system, yeah, you're not getting the derogatory effects of the immune system, your own immune system, essentially.
Listen,
yeah, exactly right.
I'm very impressed with the fact that, you know, you're studying these bats and working with Luke O'Neill on immunology, mm-hmm, and trying to, you know, improve our response to pathogens. But as I said in part one, Emma, this whole thing is going to be taken off. What did Neil, what did you call them? Big face cream. It's the anti-aging thing that's important, Emma, not the immune response. It is, how do we get bat DNA into our face cream so that at nighttime we put it on and we never age again? Come on, this is the eternal secret, Emma. How close are we to that?
Well, I think it's much more interesting than face cream. Imagine, so bats have evolved ways to not get cancer.
What?
This is what, yes. So cancer is a disease of the old age. So of all these, you know, 1,400, nearly 1,500, I'm going to have to change the name of Bat 1K to Bat 1.5K if they keep finding species. But there's very, very little, if nearly no records of them ever getting cancer. And so that means, again, they've evolved ways to not get cancer. And it's many, many species. It's many different types of cancer. And this is something that we're working on. So that's more important than face creams. something, find a way to stop all of that. Now, that could potentially be also involved with our immune system, with their telomeres, with their unique ways of being resistant to developing tumors.
Dave, I wanted Emma to just keep saying the word telomere over and over and over again, because I always look for a pun on my name for an Edinburgh show and not enough people know the word telomere. But next year I want it to be Neil Telomere's Telomeres Showcase or something like this.
That's good. Bring science to the fore. I like it.
It is truly incredible what you're saying. And I mean, like, to think that, as you said, these are mammals. These are not... I mean, look, insects are not aliens, but in terms of how they exist compared to us, it is an alien way of living. Funguses are an alien life form versus how we... But these are mammals. These, as you said, these give birth in the same way as we do. They are warm-blooded. They, all of the things that we take, you know...
They have belly buttons.
They have belly buttons.
They do.
But they're actually living an alien kind of life from the rest of the mammals.
The one thing that they do is that they fly. Imagine being able to fly. That, now, we can fly because we go in airplanes. We've got a brain that can come up with tools to allow us to do what bats do. So that they are unique among mammals really because of flight. But, you know, they love their babies. They love each other. They do all the other things that mammals do.
And they have memory as well, Dave. They have some degree of memory. So vampire bats, which I think Em has a soft spot for, because... their blood is so poor nutritionally, they have meager energy. And if they go two or three nights without having blood, they are can be banjaxed. Mm. So bats who are mates will regurgitate blood for another vampire bat who is not related to them, but they're just mates. And then the other one will remember this. And if his mate needs it in the future, he'll do the same for him.
So they're sound on top of everything else.
Sound.
They are totally sound. But think about it. They're long-lived mammals. If you want to be able to live for a long time, you need to be able to find your, you have to have good memory. You got to, you know, be able to find the best roost. Remember where the best food is. Remember who's your best mate to hang out with. They also listen to each other's echolocation calls, listening in, eavesdropping to see, right, we know that, you know, Michael here is really good at catching these insects. So I'm going to just stay quiet and follow him. And so there's an awful lot of social interaction. They've got great memory. They're able to recognize each other, where they can use sound in completely different ways that we can't even understand. And so from that point of view, maybe they're much more alien to us. So they're cool animals and sound.
Is the bat who's 41 or two, is he still alive?
So this was in Siberia, okay, near Novosibirsk. And there was a zoologist right there. And I think that they re-caught this individual at 43, but I haven't heard about it since. But so I don't know.
So a bat could live to 50 or 60, or we don't know yet.
Yes. Yes.
As you said, that is like, if you put that into dog years, that is so old. That is like,
I'll put it into human years.
Human years. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
250 years. That's just
allegedly. Ridiculous. Allegedly. The statisticians be shouting at me they did it wrong.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. Sure.
This is my last question because I really want to know the answer to this. I read about a species of bat. And six, I think, or maybe six, eight, a handful of the males they found to lactate. And some people, scientists argue it's actually not lactation. So, you know, the milk wasn't used to feed any young.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they did produce some degree of milk, whether because of a hormone in their diet or whatever.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on this particular debate?
Oh, goodness. It's very interesting that potentially there was signs for this white substance produced, I believe, in the nipples of some of these fruit bats. I can't remember the species off the top of my head now. It was quite controversial. It was found. I don't know enough to say, is it true lactation? I would say probably not. The one thing that bats do have, which are a bit different, is they have, in a certain clade of these bats, a group called the intercooperative, they have pubic nipples. And so they have real, you know, they have nipples on their mammary glands that feed their babies. Mm. But then they have these other things that are sticking up from, you know, in between their legs. And when you're looking and trying to sex what, you know, what is this, a male or a female bat? You know, you look for, you know, males look have sticky uppy things.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're like, oh, it's a male, but it's a male that's lactating. And then you realize, oh, there's the second one. It's a female. No, I don't think that's what happened. I do think that potentially this could have been a hormonal response to food that was in the diet. Maybe there's a lot of soya products in the fruit that they're eating, but I don't know enough.
Mm, right.
I'm going to give you the very diplomatic academic's response. I would like to read the literature more.
I just like the fact that a geneticist and a scientist and a zoologist has said, oh, look, it has the men have sticky uppy dicks.
Well, I could say they have rather large testicles and penis, but we don't know how that's going to do.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to end this conversation.
By the way, the pubic nipples apparently are for the babies to hold on during flight.
Exactly. They're holdfasts.
Neil, you know too much. You're not a professor. You should not know these things.
Emma, you've absolutely answered the question. Why would you tell me that? And yes, smashed it out in the park.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to part three, Dave. What did you think of that?
Neil, why would you tell me that?
Because I want you to live to 258 years of age. That's
yes.
What. They're unbelievable, aren't they?
Phenomenal. And to think about how much podcasting we could do between now and when I hit 258.
Five years. So much time.
Five batch years, just to clarify. No, honestly, like, I genuinely have had little or no thoughts on bats.
Neither have I.
Like, you know, yeah, sure. The bat kind of lore that we live in of vampires and the Batman and whatever. But to kind of to hear that their ability to effectively, as she was putting it, turn on certain responses at a like genetic cellular level and then turn off other ones. Like, obviously they're not thinking about this and doing it, but the fact that they've evolved for this to happen is so fascinating.
I thought you made a good point in that. Do you know when you're in school and some very glamorous European foreign exchange students come over and they look like us, but they're not really like us. Yeah. That's what bats are like. They're mammals, but they do all these cool things.
Yeah, like, they're super mammals.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're fascinated by them and appalled by them and amazed by them.
Yeah, it's like the smell that comes out of the Spanish student's room when he's in your house. And you're like, what is that? Why does he smell so good?
I don't understand. He moves in a way that he's never had O'Neill shorts on his body that were too tight for him. Yeah, it's they're just remarkable creatures. Emma was a brilliant expert as well. And we mentioned Luke O'Neill, so he'll be familiar to our listeners from Ireland. But if you're not from Ireland, I had him on a TV show before he became extremely famous, and he became extremely famous during the pandemic. Very, very renowned immunologist. One of the second or third most cited scientists in Europe at the time.
He
told me a great story. He was once, one of his mates won the Nobel Prize.
Wow.
And the Nobel Prize committee rang him to be a referee for the prize. So some guy rang him up and went, hello, my name is Carl Jorgensen from the Nobel Prize Committee. And Luke was like, oh my God! Oh my God! And he went, I want you to be the referee. And he was like, yeah, maybe you should start with, don't get excited, I'd like you to be the referee. You haven't won. That's how I would start. It's like the famous somebody goes down during a panel show and they can't do the panel show and they go to the warm-up comedian and go, well, you're a comedian. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, do you know anybody? It's the same thing.
Brilliant. Neil, thank you very much. I feel bat informed. I was not bat informed before this episode. And
yes,
I feel like,
and hopefully Emma gets a few quid for her project and we can learn more about bats and the 1,400 or so species and learn all their secrets. It's your turn next time.
Yeah, no, and I've been thinking already about what I've got for you next, and it's a biggie.
Good. It has to be a biggie because, you know, I've just presented you with basically the plot of an Indiana Jones film.
Bat immortality.
Foundation.
Beat that, Dave.
The fountain of youth.
Okay, well, what I've got for you next time is the man you've never heard of who saved one of the world's most iconic brands.
Oh, that has a lot of stuff going on. It started off like some sort of John le Carré novel, The Man You've Never Heard Of, and then ended right in the area of commercialism that we both love on this show.
100%. And I should say, this guy did it with 5 weeks to go. He had 5 weeks to save. And when I say one of the most iconic brands, I mean literally one of the most iconic brands. We'll get to that next time on Why Would You Tell Me That?
If you want to get us, we're on socials. If you want us to look into something specific for the podcast as well, at Neil Delamere Comedy, at Why Would You Tell Me That, and at Dave Today FM on Instagram.
Well, speaking of at Neil Delamere Comedy, you do have a comedy tour on right now that people should know about, Neil.
Yes, I do. I have 4 dates left in the current tour, which is called Liminal. Visual Theatre in Carlow is one of them that I can remember. The rest of them, I think, are sold out. And then the new tour is called Delamerium. Delamerium.
You had to think about that.
He says trying to remember the name of his own tour. And that's Vicar Street and the Everyman in Cork and 50 or 60 dates, the SSE Arena.
The simple thing is, rather than trying to remember like you are now, where you're playing and when, you just go neildelamere.com/gigs. All the info's there. All the ticket info's there. Buy your tickets. Go see Neil. He's funny and he's intelligent, guys. Plus, he's good looking. I mean, there's so many reasons to go.
You just need to stop drinking.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.